This is the Higher Ed Tech Podcast, Season 2, Episode 11. Interview with IVC's Director of Technology Services, Nick Wilkeny.
Welcome to today's Higher Ed Tech Podcast. I'm Tim Van Norman, the Instructional Technologist here at Irvine Valley College.
And I'm Brent Warner, professor of ESL here at IVC. We both enjoy integrating technology into the classroom, which is what this show is all about.
Welcome. We're glad you're here with us. So Brent, first week of classes, and I am so glad first week has started, and I'm so looking forward to the end of the week.
Yeah.
Whatever that means, I'm just looking forward to the end of that week.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's kind of like, I don't know. It's one of those, we had a longer break, which was nice, but I didn't feel like it, for, at least for me, it wasn't quite long enough, but you know, we're getting started with classes. I'm testing out a lot of new things, which we'll talk about in the future, I'm sure. But, but yeah, overall, yeah, good to be back.
Absolutely. So today we're going to have my boss, Nick Wilkening. He started a year ago, literally weeks before we went away on COVID.
That's right.
Brent, you were on his hiring committee. So good. I think you did a good job hiring him. it's all you, right? You and what, 12 other people or something like that. It was committee. A big one, but, he's been a very busy guy. We've been wanting to get him on since this started, but, he's been busy. We've been busy. It's been quite a lot there, but Nick is, the Director of Technology Services, and unusual part of that is the fact that I, in my instructional technologist role, report to him. A lot of times that will be I'll be reporting or my position would report through Office of Instruction. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great thing. Another time we can get into why I think it's a great thing, but that's a different issue. But it's really been a great time the last year getting to know Nick and getting to see different things that he's brought to the table. And especially in this time when there's been a lot of changes going on for everybody. So hopefully that's a good thing, Nick. It's looked like it from our perspective, but Nick, welcome.
Thank you, gentlemen. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm super excited to be here. This is something that I've been looking forward to, and I definitely agree. It's been, you know, over the last 12 months, something that Tim and I have talked about, and most recently, Brent, Tim and I have talked about getting together, and it's finally like the stars aligned. We can sit down during the first week of school and just muscle through, you know, kind of what the technology services look like, how we work, and I'm super excited to actually get a chance to sit on here and chat with you guys. This is something like I was telling Tim before, I've not really jumped into podcasts, both listening, but also kind of being involved with it. So this is a unique experience for me in that it's getting to highlight what technology services does. In addition to, once this comes out, listening to what my voice sounds like on a feedback, which, you know, that's never a good thing, right? You never want to hear your own voice.
Understand. So is there anything you'd like to tell us about yourself personally or your history or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. So came to IVC last year with the intention of getting to know how technology has an impact directly on students and helping support faculty with students. Came into higher ed recently and went to a district office where I was a little bit more removed. And so coming to IVC, I had high hopes of like jumping in and being like, hey, I get to, you know, see what students interact with on a day-to-day basis. Like they walk into a classroom and, you know, maybe they're frustrated with the wireless or they're frustrated with how things are working, or maybe they're just like absolutely, you know, happy with everything that's going on. I didn't know what that spectrum looked like. So as 2020 happened for so many people, you walk into a new position and kind of the world flipped upside down. Yeah. And the timeliness of it was just absolutely crazy. It was like, I started February 20th and we shut down campus, I think March 13th or 14th, somewhere around there. So I had like barely just gotten my head, you know, dunked in water and come up for air. And it was like, oh wait, no, just go back down for a whole year. You know what I mean? So it was with all good intentions of coming to campus and seeing a vibrant, you know, student community that I could help hopefully shape a technology support toward, has been, for the most part, the last, you know, 11 months, almost 12, been a pretty vacant ghost town type of environment on campus. Not to mention all the impacts that we've seen across the world with what COVID-19's done. So that's a little bit of the most recent history and kind of some of the, you know, intentions of coming to IBC and getting to know that community. But I'm hopeful that we're in the, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel we see coming, and we will get to that point where we have a vibrant student community on campus and that interaction and hopefully building a good technology profile against it. So
I like the dunking the head underwater analogy. I was going to give you trial by fire. You know, either way, I guess you die.
Yeah, right. It's like,
it doesn't give you enough time. Like, it's like, oh, you haven't been busy enough with everything else already. Like, let's just throw this all right on top of you.
You know, it's so true.
Yeah. Fairly exhausting, which is a fair enough reason why it's taken us, you know, a year to get you onto the show. But here we are. We made it work. So Nick, one of the things, I mean, I think it is important just to start off with your job title and what you see yourself as doing. I think a lot of faculty members out there know that they have like a director of tech or something like, you know, the different versions of your job title, but we'll say with director of technology services. But a lot of times they don't really know what you do. It's just like, you make the computers work, right? Like, that's your job.
Right.
But let's get it from, you know, straight from you. Like, what is your job?
Great question. Yeah. So I kind of view the director of technology services being almost like a mix between operations and being the senior technology person on campus that can help formulate or contribute to the technology strategic direction of the campus and the district. So it's kind of, I don't know, 60-40, 70-30 distribution, where you're working on providing that management and supportive role to a wide technology services staff. Everything from our what we call our infrastructure is like our routers, our switches, all of the wireless, the servers, that's kind of infrastructure, IT infrastructure support, through alternative media that we have a role in helping support throughout campus, to instructional technology. Tim's introduction was a great one, you know, providing that technical support out to the faculty and students that are more focused on the LMS, learning management system. All the way through, you know, like really anything that deals with technology as at the campus is kind of vetted and ratified through the office of, I guess, the director of technology services. And then we participate heavily within the district's strategic direction. So the vice chancellor of technology, supporting him or her in their strategic direction. Right now it's Dr. Bramucci. So helping him formulate how at the campuses we're seeing an impact on a day-to-day basis, kind of being that frontline support with, here are the things we need to think about. Here's the unique challenges IVC runs into from a technology perspective, and then advocating on behalf of making that change at the district so that it aligns with the Board of Trustees' strategic goals, the Chancellor's strategic goals, and that we kind of build that marriage, that perfect harmony between operations and strategy. And then helping President Hernandez and anything he needs, as far as technology support goes and any requirements that he has. So it's kind of, it's a jack of all trades role. You kind of have to know a little bit about a lot of different things. And even then, even if you think you know it, there's so many, you know, curveballs that get thrown to you on a day-to-day basis in technology, whether you're an instructional technologist, you're, you know, a network system administrator, or you're the director of tech. We're all in this career field, I think, because we have a passion for problem solving and we want to see customer service. We want to see a good product. And there's no day is the same. So whether you're in management or on hands-on technical role, that's really one of the most valuable pieces I've really been proud of in my career, and providing what the director of technology services does for the campus and the district. So yeah, sounds kind of good. Kind of all encompassing.
Oh, it is. And it's good that you're working with people who do know what they're talking about too. So I appreciate your insight and the ability to come back and talk to you and ask questions, even if you don't know the answer, at least you get to feel for it. So and by the way, you've almost always known the answer. So, or at least faked it well enough.
That's probably what it is. But I mean, that's the biggest component by far of the job, is relying heavily on the technical staff. Like I try to equate it a lot of times to, you know, being a medical doctor, because it's easy to understand. You have your general internal medicine, and that'd be like your everyday technical person supporting you. Then you have specialty breakouts. You got your heart surgeon, you got your brain surgeon. We have the same thing in our career fields. We have, you know, network folks that spend their entire careers knowing the inside and out of our network. We have other folks that are all server administrators and storage administrators. It's just like that. You have a neurosurgeon, you have, it takes a lot of really, almost a lifetime of career technical advancement in what you're doing to really get good at it. And our staff is fantastic, you know, world-class. Every single person on the tech support team is just top-notch. So almost daily, I'm relying heavily upon, hey, what do you guys think about this? What do you think about this technology? How are we doing with this? And that's a big part of being successful in this career field, is the minute you think you know something about tech or what technology of services does, like I said, that curveball comes and you got to be able to go to one of your staff members and be like, do you know how this works? Do you feel like you could help me solve this problem? And that's why I love, even like I said, being 12 months here, every single person on the team is just willing to jump in with a positive attitude and problem solving and can do spirit, which is it makes it so much more fun to come to work and solve those problems for sure.
So you mentioned a couple things about what led you to come from a district position to a college position. At district, you were mainly, security, is that correct? And so now you gotta include that in what you're doing. How do you find that to be really different or really similar between the two?
Yeah, I feel like one of the most valuable careers we have is working in the community college system, because it's almost treated like it's a government institution that has an awesome mission, which is you get to see the advancement of the next generation and the current generation and the future generation, bettering themselves. I mean, how cool is that to walk into your workspace every day and contribute towards? But we're also small enough because of our structure. You know, we've got the locally elected board of trustees that we can almost have the flexibility of being a small business. If you can think about it from a small business being maybe a medium-sized business, but you're not stuck in big Fortune 500 companies with bureaucracies upon bureaucracies. It's really nice because we get to, kind of build our own destiny and move forward. And so when I was at North, which is where I came from, I was in charge of infrastructure and information security, kind of two different areas. So district-wide, we were doing networks and servers and all sorts of the backbone of what a campus runs with. And then the information security components on there. So we worked regularly with different vendors to help harden a lot of the controls that we had in place so that data was protected. I came from before that, many, many careers ago, I should say, I worked in the federal government, which is where you had that big bureaucracy and things moved to a huge amount of time to be able to get implemented and protected and all the things that you really want to see that change happen effectively. And that's what I found with that kind of nice harmony and balance in the community college system, is we have a very big mission to be able to protect the data, FERPA data, certain components of HIPAA data, the different California breach law notifications that come into effect, not to mention just the everyday technology profile. So you get to learn a lot in a short span of time, because you have to be able to put those controls in place. And so coming from the district, I was used to dealing with three separate colleges and what each of their needs and requirements were, and then trying to find that balance across all three that we found a solution for, whatever that would look like. And so coming to the campus and finding that we have we have our own oh, dang, I'm blanking on what it's called, like our own personality, I guess is probably the best way of saying it. What makes IVC, IVC, and then advocating that to a similar position at district, but having empathy and understanding of what goes on at the district has made it a more collegial way of getting problems solved together. So, you know, it brings that experience into play saying, hey, I know where you've sat. I know how hard it is to have multiple different people saying, hey, I need this, I need this, I need this, and I don't like this. And then how do you figure out that common language that everybody can speak so that we all move towards the end state goal, which is, you know, better infrastructure, better technology, better protections. And it's it has definitely helped me. And I'm super glad I had the experience at the district. It was a great place to work. And it's been a great place to work at IBC in providing that experience here as well. Kind of to, you know, it has helped me in the long run, I should say.
Yeah, that's been one of the things that, you know, I feel like my colleagues have really appreciated about you too, is like, an actual real passion for community college and actually, you know, like caring about what's going on here. Cause sometimes, you know, I think we can just speak frankly that, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, you're the tech person. You're just kind of doing your tech job or whatever, but you're not really connected. But like, you've always really shown like, oh no, how, like, students first, faculty first, how do we make these things work? Right. And then like, okay, then it's going to work somehow around that. I think that's really, you know, well appreciated. And speaking of faculty and students first, I'm going to ask a little question on one of my own pet projects or my, you know, one of the things that I like to work on, which is, classroom design and classroom refreshes, which I think, you know, I come in there pretty passionate about, like, hey, we shouldn't have cemetery seating where everybody's just looking at the back of the student's head right in front of them. And we should have things that actually support, you know, it might cost a little bit more, but this is a better way to learn. And, you know, in my thinking, classroom design is pedagogy, you know, all these types of things. But I think, you know, people, even me, like, we don't always know how classroom refreshes work, right? Because it's not only one person's decision. Like, it's not my magic classroom where I get to say everything that's going to happen in there. There's district choices. There's, hey, in 10 years, who's going to be the person using this room, or what are the purposes going to be there too? But a lot of those things I'm missing, and a lot of those things I think, you know, people who listen are also don't totally understand the processes. So how does a classroom refresh work? If I want to get into a new classroom with a great new setup, how do I go about doing that as a teacher? And what are the reasons why I can and cannot get some of the things that I want?
Well, so let me back up to the original first part that you said that, you know, coming to IBC and having the emphasis on students and faculty. I was mentored by an incredible former director when I was at North. Her name is Deborah Ledford. She started in faculty at Glendale Community College and then worked her way up to be dean and then transitioned over to chief information systems officer at North. And she always made that I came from industry to higher ed. So I didn't have any experience in higher ed. And when I came in, she really did an outstanding job, having been in the faculty position and been close to students, in reminding me at the district office that we're at the district office. Don't forget that there is, you know, classrooms out there. And this kind of feeds into what your question is, which is, to me, it's very easy when you're at the district office or you're in your, you know, Monday through Friday office, wherever you may be, to forget that operations start and end in the classroom. They have to, right? Because the whole entire point of a student coming to campus is to walk into that classroom, to learn, better themselves, graduate or transfer, and really get to that next stage of whatever piece of their career or educational path looks like. So what I would say to answer your question is, I almost will never personally argue against a classroom refresh that's innovative and different and has that, you know, different thought process, that a new way of providing a technology service. And I know my boss, David, has even said that too, even in the most recent thing we talked about, which was integrating the lighting controls within the classrooms. We have a basic aid project, and DeVee said it kind of outright. He said, you know, classroom is where it is. And if we want to make it world class, we got to spend the money and make it attractive for students. And not only attractive, so we have students that want to come to IVC, but we make it exactly what your intention is, Brent, and that is like to make it a better learning environment. How do we increase retention? How do we increase retention of knowledge? How do we increase that graduated or transfer status, the guided pathways? How do we make sure that we get students in, that they know the knowledge, and that they ultimately get out on the right path? And so I love the idea of bringing in new technologies. We're very blessed in this district to have different flexible, you know, money situations, being a basic aid district. So we can look at innovative technologies and different ways of moving the audio video components around so that it makes more sense for, you know, an AESL class versus maybe a STEM or a biology or math class. How do we make sure that it fits the vision of what that faculty member looks like? So to answer outright, I don't have like a blanket template for an AV refresh. We did do a big, huge AV refresh over the last, I want to say 8 months. We started about 8 months ago. And we upgraded 63 classrooms. We have an existing master service agreement with a couple of vendors. We bid it out. They came in and they just did an outstanding job with the one that we selected, really upgrading the technology from kind of a general, I guess, that vast majority of the classrooms from a general standpoint. So now there's a standard technology profile in almost all classrooms. Excuse me. So if you go to one classroom in one building, you should hopefully walk into another one and have a very similar experience, uniformity and standardization. And in addition to that, we want to be supportive in other technologies that would be kind of on top of that. I look at it like the federal government and then the states. You know, you got your federal, which is everything, and then you got the states that can provide the additional flexible needs for whatever that class would look like. And that's really where I didn't get that experience at the district office that I was trying to hone in here is I want to hear from faculty. I want to get back to what they need and then bring in cool different things that they need to try out. And if it doesn't work, then hey, we'll try something else. But that's how I view our shop in technology services, is providing that customer service element. It's not kind of a blanket way, but if any faculty member or anybody is interested in different things, I put my cell phone on my signature block. I try to make myself available as much as possible. So please reach out. Let's talk about different ways that we can make this a better innovative technology campus for sure. Cause I'm kind of on a soapbox, I know, but,
this is your opportunity.
I literally like, right. Yeah. Yes. I tell people regularly that technology for a long time has viewed as a support element, and it still has a lot of that. And in addition to that, there is not one component throughout your day where you are not interacting with an information system. Right. I would be hard pressed in 2021 for anybody to see that they're not touching a phone system, a computer, even projectors are now considered information systems. If it has an IP or it can connect to a network or it has processing power, that's our job. That's our ability to support. So literally anything and everything is within the scope of us figuring out how we can improve and use technology, because it's just become so ingrained within our career, our life on a day-to-day basis. So with that, you know, it doesn't have to be just a projector and a computer in a classroom anymore. We can think about different really fun ways of integrating students coming, especially from K-12, where they're so technology savvy and walking in, knowing how things work. I feel like I've been in technology for a while and they would run circles around me, you know, like They're learning coding at like 7 years old. How nuts is that, right? Like, this is just such a fun time to watch, you know, the innovation. So
that to me is one of the big things too.
So yeah,
because I see, you know, we live in a fairly wealthy area and kids from coming from some of these schools, right? And so it's like they're coming from these junior highs and high schools that are like through the roof, and then it's like, okay, what are they going to come to when they come to a community college, right? And I think that's an important question to be able to answer, right? Because if they're going to say, hey, if they're going to be, and I think, you know, you guys have done a great job of kind of addressing this and making it, you know, a lot better over the last years. But like, you know, what are they going to see when they come in? Are they going to go, oh, this is old stuff, or, oh, no, like, I'm comfortable with this. I'm ready to jump into it. I don't have to spend time, you know, making adjustments. I'm in on this and I'm ready to go. So I think that's huge.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the, yeah.
And along those lines, we also have people who have computers in their offices, whether they're faculty or staff or whatever. And I get a lot of these calls, so I'm gonna pass something to you, Nick. And that is, you know, the question of why can't I have my computer replaced right now? You know, what? Why does it take so long? And by the way, along those lines, why can't I have the XYZ computer that I want? Sometimes it's a Mac that we need, or a Windows computer. In the classroom, we've gone almost exclusively PC, but there's a couple of Macs left. But it's questions like that. How do those decisions get made? Yes, and by the way, just a reminder for those listening, Brent is the Mac guy and I'm the Windows guy. I'm the one who uses a real computer it's an ongoing thing that we go into. But to that point, as people are making their own decisions, how does the technology services department figure that out and what's best and refresh times? I mean, we just are finishing off the Windows 10 refresh and stuff like that. So.
Great question. And I can see where it would be a real frustration where if it's like, hey, I'm used to Macs, I know them inside and out, or I'm used to Windows machines and I love Office. I know how to work PowerPoint. I'm an Excel guru. I know all the different pivot tables and macros I can build in. And to answer it really explicitly, it comes down to resource management. Standardizing on one PC, let's say if it's Windows or Mac, we have limited technology support staff. We're working through some different components to help be, if you've kind of going back to earlier when I was talking about, you know, having a technology staff that spends years getting to know their technology, for those folks that work in desktop services, you know, the Windows operating system versus the Mac operating system is two wholly different support methodologies and models. And there's not one that's right or one that's wrong. However, over the years, yeah, right. I was going to say the caveat is here, which is as the years have gone on, Windows has made it, Microsoft really has made it a little bit easier, actually a lot easier, for us to manage many different machines in an enterprise environment. Mac has not shifted their business operations to be more business oriented, where they have a central, what we call directory management, or like an Active Directory, where you have central standardized ways of managing many different devices and then upgrading those devices. Because even one of the big driving factors coming from an information security background is going from Windows 7 to Windows 10 has been a huge project for us because of the amount, it's a foundational architectural change between 7 and 10. And so it's not just like, hey, go upgrade this. You know, we back up the data, we do the upgrade, we restore the data. We have to make sure that the data that's been restored is still true and available, and that all the files go back to where folks have. And that's just one machine. So if you can think about that on a 1,000+ machine, campus support, and really having three people that can support that across the enterprise, it really just comes down to how do we standardize on one platform so that that technician that gets out there is able to get that problem resolved quickly, so that folks can get back online, their emails back up, they're able to get into a Zoom meeting nowadays, right? Back then it might have been jumping on listening to a conference or something, but just getting us back to an operational state is really where we're trying to focus the workforce to let them get that standard. And then we're looking at improving that process. So we just finished up what we call a proof of concept, a POC for a product called VMware Workspace ONE. And it's a really interesting product because it's software that sits on top of your operating system, but lets you manage it completely. So if we've got 8 different versions of laptops out in the field, and we've got a Mac on the campus, and we've got Windows as well, we can put this software that kind of standardizes everything. And now it provides an ease for us to manage many different devices from one kind of, I guess, single pane of glass, to use the buzz term as a cliche. But those different types of technologies are kind of disrupting a lot of what we're used to in our support models. And that's a great thing, I think, because it gives folks that really like Macs and are comfortable with it and are more efficient and productive on Macs, that ability for us to get it built into the refresh cycle in the future. But right now, that's kind of the big reason that drives us to standardize on one is not only resource management, but simplification for upgrades. So we do information security controls that help protect data better, and just kind of having one knowledge base in support model really helps us.
And that's one of the things that I appreciated coming out of 30 years in industry, coming here, and all of a sudden everything is standardized, which is what we've always tried to do in small businesses. It's really hard because every time you buy something, it's new. But yes, that standardization has made all the difference in the world on so many different levels. So absolutely.
Yeah. And I think also, to kind of tying into that, because, Nick, I think a lot of the people have their own desires and, their individual things as teachers and, hey, I've got, I'm trying to run my class in this way, or I'm trying to run the things that I'm doing in this way. And of course they think about themselves, but they're not always thinking about the bigger, like, well, how do I scale that to, 500 faculty members or whatever it is. Right. And so, so we were kind of wondering, I think kind of connected to that is the questions of, what do people think that you do that you actually don't do? And the flip of that, what are things that people don't realize that you do?
Yeah, so it's funny. I started my career at the help desk, which is, 20 years ago, I was answering calls and saying, hey, my mouse doesn't work. And I think what most people don't realize that, or what most people sometimes think of the help desk as being a general help desk to everything. So it could be, I used to get calls regularly, like, oh, the toilet's clogged. And I'd be like, do you know you're calling the technology help desk line? Like, I don't know how much I can help you with that, but in the bathroom,
just in the employee bathroom down the hall.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, I got a dead battery. Can you call AAA? And I'll be like, I guess I could do that. I can help you out. Not a problem. Cause I know how that probably feels. That sucks. But no, it's generally technical help desk lines, not our technology help desk lines, rather than what I think a lot of times folks will call and, maybe be a little confused, which is, it's just that gentle reminder, like, hey, we really try to help with technology and here's the phone number for facilities, or here's the phone number for, AAA, but still having that customer service element where you're trying to help the individual out. Cause I think that's a big reason why a lot of people get into technology, is they want to help. And that feeling when you solve a problem, like, I still remember it to this day, when you're on the help desk, you go out into the field and somebody's just at their wit's end. Like, I've tried, I've restarted the computer. Don't belittle me. Please don't ask me to restart this computer one more time. I've done it twice, three times. I can't get my email to work, or my phone's dead. And you're able to, like, tweak it and work it a little bit. And then that person sees that it's fixed, and they're like, oh my goodness, this is like, there's very few feelings in your career where you're like, I actually helped somebody. I actually was able to tangibly see the result of that helping, get them to that point where they're jumping back in and getting to work, or they're, maybe communicating with their family member, whatever it might be. That's a great feeling. Kind of the other converse part of it is some of the areas that people don't realize. It goes back to what kind of I talked about a few minutes ago, which is technology is everywhere nowadays. And I think a lot of times people sometimes think like technology is the computer on my desk and, hey, I got a call because my printer is dead or he is not doing what I want it to. And we are like, I want to say on almost every shared governance meeting platform, we're in every capital project. We're in, like, if there is an area on campus or at the district that you can think of, I would be willing to bet dollars to donuts that we have some component or element or contribution toward it. That's how integrated we've become over the last 20 years is no longer just networks and computers. You know, we're doing a pretty cool project over the next, I want to say 12 months, where the Live Oak Terrace has, we're going to be upgrading the audio and video to it, toward it. So, I mean, just crazy elements of technology that are going to be built into this that we're going to bring in a consultant to help us with it. And you wouldn't think that like an area where you could set up, you know, jazz music and listen to it with some cool acoustics would have a huge technology component. But some of the stuff that we're looking at is heavily relied upon with the technology side of the house. And just different things that you just don't think about on a day-to-day basis. And even myself, I don't think about where it's like, oh, yeah, we probably should be a part of that discussion to make sure that we can have that contribution to the overall questions that might come up about how technology is integrated and who's going to take this on. So it's been a big part of why the resource management has been a big focus. If we're able to standardize on things, now we can focus on the improvement in technology in other areas on campus and throughout the district. So it's we're like quickly becoming almost like a trade, you know. It's right. Just so you rely heavily upon it, and it's a big part of keeping the lights on in every facet of the campus.
Yeah, one I was going to add into there too that I didn't realize, I just didn't think about it until it came up in a meeting, and you said you guys were dealing with it, was like straight up cyber attacks on our campus, on our websites, on our emails, and I'm like, oh, that, like, to me, I was just like, didn't even strike me that happens, right? Like, of course it does, but like, it's just not in the front of my head. But then I was like, that seems like its own whole job of like security, you know? and like, you guys are dealing with that on top of everything else. Yeah, I mean, you obviously don't have to get into how all that works, but it's, I mean, that it's just to add on top of it is like, there's so many things happening that you have to be responsible for. It's mind blowing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, the cybersecurity side, one other area I'll plug into is most recently, Tim was absolutely foundational in this and in getting it set up and tested, managed, and deployed was we just incorporated a full closed captioning program within the technology services, because the need for meeting 508 compliance with us moving to, fully remote learning environment was extremely high, and we needed to be able to get faculty support and ultimately students the ability to see, captioning in their videos that are posted in Canvas. And, you know, that is generally a pretty big project separate and apart from everything that is worked on. And, you know, we worked through it through the fall. It's deployed out now. It's running really well. I've been really, really proud of how Tim kind of formulated everything and did it really like professionally, and was able to get it, you know, rocked really, really well. And that's one area that you don't really think of when you think of closed captioning. You're like, oh, maybe I should go through this office, or it might not be tech. And now that's been a big part of how we've been able to modernize a lot of the faculty support needs, and ultimately the students' engagement is through closed captioning and definitely cybersecurity. That's one of those areas that, you know, it's hard to find cybersecurity folks. They pay really well in industry. So being able to hire them into our area is a little bit more of a challenge. But, you know, Jeff Dorse at the district has just done an outstanding job hiring a great team of InfoSec folks that are professional. They know their stuff. They're super responsive. And yeah, that is one of my biggest, if there's ever a question about what keeps a technology person up at night, it's almost, you know, I'd be willing to bet it always comes back to cybersecurity and how we, you know, it's just such a huge area that we just don't have the resources to support. And ultimately we try to be as proactive instead of reactive to those types of things as we can. But eventually, you know, statistics are there. If you're going to get in a car wreck at one time in your life, you're going to get attacked by a cybersecurity, threat at some time in your career. So I kind of equate it to that. And there's a lot of different things that, yeah, you're absolutely right, Brent, that we don't think about.
So that said, you brought up a whole lot of different subjects that we could obviously dig way into a lot, but just kind of as a closing question for you, you've been here a year, literally, I think in 11 months or something like that by now. What have you learned? What is it that you're taking away, you're thinking about from this year that, and part of it's COVID, but part of it's all kinds of other questions that have come up. So what have you learned in this job in this past year?
It's just such a memorable year. I don't know how to put a more underscored kind of piece to it in what we've learned as a society, as a college, as a student supporting organization. Building relationships, understanding business processes, understanding students, you know, impact and how they've had just an absolutely a bummer year. I don't know how to put whether it's mental health challenges, financial challenges, technology challenges. We have seen a different side of the way that the U.S. has worked in the last 12 months that I don't think any of us were ever prepared for and could have supported. And I think what I've learned most is the way to be resilient is probably the best way of saying it, is how do you take a hit? How do you see how that hit impacts you? How do you learn from that hit, and how do you do it better in the future so that you don't have that same impact? And I really hope that we are able to learn from this because of the time that we've had this remote environment and get, you know, that we've tried to learn and build business processes and get to know each other over Zoom, over technology. And thank goodness, you know, that we had technology to be able to do this in a time of a worldwide pandemic. But yeah, I would say the name of the game for me is resilience. How do you, walking into a new position or being in your current position and just kind of getting knocked down and then get back up and then get knocked down again and then again and again and then get back up and make sure that you're still continuing and just moving through that. I really hope we all as a society take that lesson and learn really a big way of how we want to do it in the future. So yeah, that was a kind of the piece that's most impactful to me.
Awesome. Well, Nick Welkening, we're really grateful we had you on here. Like we said, we've been trying to get you on the whole year but I think this is a good time to get it done, right? Because now we've just been through so much and there's so much to in the future, we'd love to have you back to talk more about some specifics in certain areas. If you're willing or ready to come back, with all that free time you have,
dude. I'm in 100%. This has been fun. This is super cool.
Yeah, there's just so much. And I think, I bet the people listening too will have other questions and things that they want to know about. So if you're listening, send in questions. We'll kind of keep them on a side file ready for the next time that we can bring you back on the show. But this has been great and we really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. I've had a blast. This is super cool and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening today. In this episode, we talked about Nick Welkening, the Director of Technology Services here at Irvine Valley College. For more information about this show, please visit our website at thehigheredtechpodcast.com. There you will find podcasts and links to the information we've covered.
And as always, we do want to know your feedback, so please go to thehigheredtechpodcast.com and let us know your thoughts. Like I said, if we can get Nick back on the future show, then we'll save some questions in there as well. So please feel free to jump on there and leave us some ideas for topic ideas as well.
For everyone at IVC that's listening, if you need help with technology questions, please contact IVC Technology Support at 949-451-5696 or by emailing ivctech@ivc.edu. If you have questions about technology in your classroom, virtual classroom, or live classroom, please contact me, Tim Van Norman, at tvannorman, VANNORMAN, at ivc.edu.
And if you want to reach out to me about the show, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Brent G. Warner.
I'm Tim Van Norman.
And I'm Brent Warner. And we hope this episode has helped you on the road from possibility to actuality. Have a good one, everybody. Take care.